With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It would be a wolf, but eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Flat in the shot. What a goal!
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the latest Wolves Fancast match review. I'm your host, Little Dan. Thanks for joining us tonight. Obviously, there's some big games on in the Premier League tonight via Amazon TV. As we're just going live, Alex Iwobi has just put Fulham 1-0 ahead against this weekend's opponents, Nottingham Forest. Bournemouth are currently winning 1-0 away to Crystal Palace, and Brentford are currently winning 1-0 away to Brighton. Last night's game was literally, if Tuesday was a football match, wasn't it, lads? Honestly, but not even Bob Ross could have painted a better football game last night. It was terrible, wasn't it, Ed? Weather conditions was bad. Tuesday night, Burnley, probably one of the least glamorous sides in Premier League history. No offense, Burnley, but you just ain't. You just aren't a glamorous side. Fuck off, Burnley, as the in-betweeners said. Going into the sort of the match, what was your expectations on the back of the defeat against Arsenal on Saturday?
I think it was always going to be a difficult one to get back up for, wasn't it? We've got this trope of only playing against the good teams, and the teams that are below us, we always struggle against. Huddersfield under Nuno just screams out, and there's loads more. So I wasn't expecting much. I was expecting the kind of game that we got. I felt like that Burnley got a little bit too much credit. I think at the weekend they beat a Championship side 5-0, and we knew how good they were in the Championship last year. So I wasn't expecting much from them. And I think I was expecting more from us, to be honest. I think we came out and stooped to their level very, very early on, I believe. That's where I felt we went with the game.
Yeah, it was a struggle. It had the old classic Wolves, didn't it, Stuart? Like Ed's mentioned, their defeats to Huddersfield. I remember one of the worst midweek games I've ever saw, Dan Molyneux, was when we got beat 1-0 by, I think it was Wigan on a Tuesday or Wednesday. I think, did Dan Byrne score for Wigan that night?
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
It was a cold night. It was one of the worst games of football I've seen. And then Dan Byrne scores in injury time. Stu, you was in the WhatsApp group before the game saying, lump on Burnley at 10-3 on, sorry. What was your thoughts going into the game when you saw the lineup and Dan Bentley was given the nod over a knock-filled Jose Sarr and Hugo Bueno starting again at left back? What was your thoughts going into the match?
I mean, I weren't thrilled. I mean, it's always good to get a bit of a rise out of Gully straight away in the old WhatsApp group. I mean, one day these things will be publicised, like the COVID inquiry. But yeah, I mean, the fact that we hadn't won in seven against Burnley when they used to be our whipping boys pre-Premier League era this time round, it just seemed like it was painted that way, that it was going to be another one of them nights where, yeah, we've done the hard work against Man City and Tottenham, and now the onus is on us to do something. And then you look at the whole thing about Sarr not being up for it despite him quite visibly jarring his back for that second goal was quite ludicrous to me anyway. But then when we saw that lineup with Bentley starting, I thought, oh, okay, well, certain people are going to be quiet now. I've been very vocal about the fact that I don't like Dan Bentley as a keeper. I think he's a bit too error prone, but I was amazed that he's only 30. I thought he was a lot older than that when I looked it up today, because I watched the Amazon interview after the game, and in the YouTube comments there was Southend fans like bigging him up, saying he's the best keeper they've ever had and all this stuff. I thought, well, maybe I was a bit harsh on him, but what I saw at Bristol City was not that keeper that we saw yet last night. So we'll get on to that. But yeah, that and bringing Hugo Bueno in from the cold after months out, not even playing in the under-21s, he didn't fill me with massive confidence, knowing our record in these games. But and then it kicked off.
Yeah. As I said, thanks for those who are joining us tonight. There is obviously a lot of live games on that you could be watching. So thank you for joining for us here at the Wolves Fancast in association with Audi and the Boston Coffee Company. Another goal has gone in and it's come again at the Craven Cottage. It's Fulham 2, Forest 0. And it's Fulham's number 7, Raul Jimenez, with the goal to put more misery on Steve Cooper. Hopefully he doesn't get the sack after this game tonight, because that's new manager bench on Saturday, isn't it, Ed?
Yeah, let's not have that. I haven't got the nerves for that coming into Christmas, all these busy period. No, I wouldn't mind Forrest going away and not coming back for another 23 years either. So I'm not against that either, personally. But yeah, let's not have a new manager bounce. Let's just keep the manager slump going, and then they can sack him on Monday after we beat him.
I did mention off air, obviously you can see in the picture there, Ruben Neves took time away to watch the game last night. Obviously he's watching it in Saudi somewhere. It's good to see that he's still got that love for Wolves. We talked about it off air, didn't we, Stu? He's going to run down his contract and he'll be back in 3 years, isn't he?
There's a reason why he's saying that he's not going to Newcastle and he's not going to Arsenal. The fact that every single time you see his kids, they've got Wolves kits on. We all know what's going to happen. Fair play to him. He's took one for the team, gone over there, made his fortune, and he'll be back in a couple of years. Superb.
The milkman has delivered. Obviously, he's watching the same game as me, just watching Raul Jimenez. He's back. I'm not sure if any of you guys have actually saw his goal that he's just scored, but it was pomp. Raul Jimenez muscled off a defender and rifled it past whoever the Nottingham Forest goalkeeper is now. I don't know his name because I know he ain't Matt Turner. I got Matt Turner in my fantasy Premier League and he ain't playing.
Yep,
I'm just having an absolute nightmare with Fantasy League this season. I think I'm 4.2 million in the world. That's basically like, there's teams where people have created a team the first game week and I'm still above me with that first game week and I ain't changed it since. Let's get back to the game last night. Obviously, those who have been living under a rock, Wolves ran out 1-0 winners at home to Burnley. Bit of a... It was a classic Tuesday match, wasn't it, Stu? The first sort of 15, 20 minutes. Burnley did look like a promoted side throughout the match. They tried, they huffed and puffed. They had a few nice passage of plays, but I think the longer the game grew on, we did take control, didn't we?
They just looked really naive. And I know that this has been a kind of running theme of their season so far, and there's been talk about it and the company's not going to change and whatever. But the amount of times they did that stuff back to Trafford, where he clearly didn't want it, and yeah, he looks like a good keeper with his feet, and we saw it for the England under-21s, but you can't keep doing that over and over again like they were. I mean, that was what their main thing was, to kind of lure us in and hit us on the break, because other than Koliosho, who apparently destroyed Semedo before he got injured, to some people.
He struggled that first 10-15 minutes against Koliosho. I was fearing for Nelson in the first 10-15 minutes because how fast Koliosho was. I thought we need to get someone on here to support, take a winger off and put Doherty and Samara doubling up on him. It's like we was playing against flipping Prime, flipping Mbappe yesterday, the way some journalists were reporting.
Yeah, I was just disappointed in him because obviously we know that we... Sheffield United have to have points, don't they, eventually, and we had to give them to them, as is the Wolves' way. But they are shit. They're really, really shit. And Nate mentioned on the Soccer Neophytes podcast, if you want to give them guys a listen, that they were kind of thinking, well, would an MLS team beat Sheffield United with 10 men? They'd probably beat them anyway, with 11 men, because they're awful. And for the fact that this Burnley side, the Burnley side that we saw last night, beat them so heavily... And luckily, quite easily, yeah, first half, they're 11 on the pitch. But still, from the highlights, it looked like they didn't do anything. And Burnley last night looked, like you said, looked like a promoted team trying to do something, which they can't do.
Yeah, James Trafford, obviously, he's come with the credibility of being Man City's academy guy. Obviously, Vincent Kompany's obviously been... He's probably scouted him. Obviously, he's been given credibility within Man City ranks because of his history there. He just looked a really young goalkeeper to me, James Trafford. He was trying the neat stuff, but from a physicality point of view, we didn't put him under enough sort of pressure, did we, Ed?
No, the corners in particular were painful again, weren't they?
It's so frustrating, Ed, honestly. Yeah. Everyone here knows my opinions on Pablo Sarabia. I thought he had an half-decent game last night, but I think he got to the second half and literally shouted from the safe bank, if he don't beat the first man, I'm going to throttle him.
And he probably didn't, did he? I don't remember him beating the first man. So that's where you want to not go back to basic stats, but you do just want to put it on the keeper, right? He's, what, 12? And he looks like he's about 9 stone.
It looks
at some
like
point,
David De Gea when he first came to United.
Yeah, he looked, and there were times yesterday, like you said, Dan, when the ball went back to him and he didn't want it. There was that, is it in the second half when it was on his left foot and he didn't want to clear it and he kind of dilly-dallied on the ball and booted it out eventually. I think there were clear moments where we could have put him and that Burnley team to the sword a lot more with some more direct play. We started playing some of their stuff in the first half, this tiki-tacking it around at the back, and Gary O'Neill even went long, didn't he, eventually, which kind of is where
we had a chance off straight away.
Which we got something from.
I had a bit of an embarrassing moment, just for those who are watching Wolves Fancast, not the matches, Liverpool leading 1-0 at Sheffield United. I had a big embarrassing moment during the game last night because I spent so much time not belittling, but talking down to my dad about the reasons why we try and play out from the back. And like you said, Dean Marsden's commented saying thoughts on the moans and groans when we were playing out. I'll give you all this speech about why we're trying to play out from the back. We're trying to draw them out. So we've got like a 3-on-3, 4-on-3 in a quick transition. But just get it rid, get it long. And then finally, after all the jeers, Dan Bentley absolutely launches one and we have our first attack of the half, which pretty much sparks a bit of more effort, didn't it, Ed?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was when we realised that we could get at them. And I think the crowd had, like you said, the moans and groans were there for all to hear, weren't they? And the players would have been feeling that. And I think that just that little glimpse also maybe just shut Burnley up a little bit to think that, you know, we can go long and we can hurt them quite quickly. I think that's where our class showed in that little move that came from that Gary O'Neill doing this on the sideline, which apparently is code for lump it forward. And he did that. And I think we'll come to the goal, but that's where the difference in being an established Premier League team, which is what most of our squad is, compared to a promoted team that are sticking to these principles, which clearly don't work.
What's the sort of general consensus in the Steve Bullupper stew in regards to playing out from the back? Is it nervous? Is it a lot of moaning? What's the consensus there?
I don't think people mind it. It's just when there's a scale in there. There's a sliding scale of when you do it and how deep you do it. Because a lot of the time it's fine. You're playing around. You play. You keep possession. You go back and you recycle play. Whatever. No problem with that. But when you're pissing around on your own 6-yard box, we haven't got the players to do that. It's not just about the keepers. It's not Bentley or Saar or anyone else. We haven't got the defenders to do that kind of stuff either. And that's where the goal came from for them.
It ain't necessarily just that for me as well. It's the front three showing for it in the pockets between their defence and midfield. There wasn't enough showing from Juan Cunha and Sarabia for me in that first half an hour. There were periods when we had the ball really sort of left side of midfield, left back position. And they were sort of number nine, right centre forward, all in a cluster. It was just like, you've got to show, lads, because the defence were trying to play out and they just had no options. That every time they did go along, it was coming straight back.
Yeah, it was so static. And I mean, it was really, we've had that advert on the big screen of it for Jill's Concrete, which is quite funny because that's my mum's name. But they were standing like statues at times. But it was just two banks of nothingness. There was no movement, no nothing. So when you are playing out from the back like that, it's going too far. We can't play like that. And I really do believe you give this a year, 2 years, no one will be doing it anymore because they've all realised it's a stupid thing to do. Because, yeah, Man City can do it. But you look at how bad Alisson was in that first half a couple of weeks ago. Even he couldn't do it that day for Liverpool. And he's one of the best in the world at doing it. So when you're inviting people on and you're taking risks for no reason whatsoever with very little payoff, what is the point in it? I mean, it's not like, oh, yeah, because I want Sean Dyche and all this stuff that I know that's going to get thrown at me as usual. But you just got to see common sense sometimes. And when we stop doing it, we look like a better side. We look more comfortable. And they did not. And that's kind of where the goal came from in the end.
It's sort of, it is a full NFL vibe you're talking there. It's all about gaining as much yards as you can instead of inviting them on. We talked about James Trafford a few minutes ago, but let's talk about Dan Bentley, because before Wolves went 1-0 ahead a few moments before, Jai Rodriguez, after a bit of, how do you want to describe João Gomes in the build-up to that effort, Ed?
Not really there, was he? It was kind of weak, wasn't it? I think with him, I find his busyness sometimes masks whether or not he's actually any good. And I don't know if I mean that or not, but I know everyone says he's busy and he's this bulldog and he's this terrier, but there are times he just kind of flits about and doesn't really get stuck in either. I think he's got a lot to learn from Lamina, and I like him a lot, but sometimes he still seems a little lightweight for me.
Naive.
I feel
naive, that's the right word.
It'll come with experience.
Yeah,
right?
It will.
That defensive midfielder, or like you said, I don't think Wolves... If you've got all of our midfielders available, it's Lamina and Gomez all day for me. I think João Gomez has still got a lot of ceiling to reach in regards to his actual ball playing midfield. We've seen him have a few shots this season. Obviously, he scored the winner at Southampton last season, so he has got that in his locker. With a bit more experience and choosing when and when he can't dilly dally in our own half will come with experience, Ryan. I think, but he was really let off with that moment, wasn't he, Stu?
Yeah, and you look at it, I mean, it was a similar kind of place from where Huang skied it into the air for Newcastle to score last season, and he got vilified for that. Obviously, João Gomes got out of trouble by that miraculous double save, but he's going to do that. We've got to remember that he's the same age as Fabio, and Fabio's still young and all this, but João Gomes does this stuff, and he looks composed 80% of the time, and then he goes and does something mad, but he's a kid. He's going to do this. And again, he hasn't even been here for a year. So it's not...
Has he only had like one full season for Botafogo before he joined?
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
So, I mean, like, he's got a lot of games to still find his way of becoming the next sort of Fernandinho or Cesar Sampaio for the older ones. But yeah, those two saves from Dan Bentley. I had Jai Rodriguez to have one shot on target in a bet builder, which I think was like... 5 out of 8 that I got right. Smile to get booked. Darryl O'Shea to get booked didn't happen. But that one shot on target was a huge save. And then the follow up from Breno, you can see in that bottom right hand corner, literally fingertips and just past the post. That it was well worth his clean sheet bonus that he'll have in his wage packet next week.
Yeah, it was crucial, wasn't it? That was the difference really in the game, wasn't it? That and the goal that we'll talk about was Burnley's only real sort of pocket of any kind of real pressure in that one move. Really, they did a lot of sidewards and some thrusting at the start, but not a lot was going on. And it's an incredible save, and I know we'll come on to who starts at the weekend, but it's Bentley couldn't have done any more really in his not necessarily cameo against Arsenal. It was a lot longer than a cameo, and then his full game yesterday, he couldn't really have done more. He wasn't called on a lot, and when he was, they were two exceptional saves. And that save that he makes there, the one in the bottom right-hand corner, is what Edison failed to do at the weekend against Tottenham, wasn't it? He got a hand to it, but didn't push it around the post. And it's those fine margins as a goalkeeper, isn't it, that is where you make your bread and butter, isn't it?
It's the fact that it's deflected as well.
Yeah.
And then he still reacts that quickly from the penalty spot, effectively looking at the top right picture there. Just superb.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, after that first save from Jai Rodriguez, I mean, you can see it's just outside the 6-yard box, and it's harder to miss than score for me, that chance for a professional Premier League striker. So, you know, it could have easily been patting himself on the back for that big save, and then he's obviously straight back in it with the reaction save for the second. Obviously, Vincent Kompany says when you make a mistake, you get punished. Jai Rodriguez didn't take that chance, and just before halftime, he Cham Wan now on 8 league goals for the season. Just a composed finish. He could have snatched at it after the first pass from Cunha, but composed himself and started past Trafford. Nice finish, Ed.
yeah, he just waited, didn't he? He waited till he was like ready to just take the shot. And it was talked about, I think, on the Amazon at halftime, wasn't it, that he's got that I'm the main man kind of feel from Gary O'Neill. And you kind of see that in the confidence. Like you said, he didn't snatch at that shot. He didn't even take it first time or second time. He waited until he was ready to just find the corner. And he seems to be one of those players that is one of those form players. We had it with Jota, didn't we, where he'd sort of score in streaks. But he's probably the only player that knows where the back of the net is on a regular basis for us. And the more he scores, I just think the more I was completely confident that he was going to wait until he was, you know, ready to slot it in. I had no doubts when he got into that position. And I've not had that feeling about a striker since prime Raul. And before then, we're talking Ebanks Blake in the Championship. That's how far we're going back.
Yeah. I'm not saying Josh is an exaggeration, but it's not a harsh comment, is it, Stu? Because of like, the streaks and the ability he has to beat defenders on his own. He has games where, like Arsenal on Saturday, I thought he was terrible on Arsenal on Saturday. I said on our Twitter that I would have took him off at half-time because I didn't think the game was there for him. It looked like he was having a stinker. You look back to the Tottenham game, the chance that he missed, was we losing 1-0 at the time? The way he sort of snatched it, the way like he reacted, it looked as if he was offside, but then you watch the replay back, he's well onside, he's completely shanked it. He has got that in him, hasn't he, where he can be sort of non-existent or poor for 90% of the game and then pops up with a winner.
Yeah. But again, you look at the man at the top of that list. I mean, look how bad Haaland was at the weekend and then the city that he missed. So, but the fact that we've got someone there who's missing them chances where we haven't had that for ages anyway. And he takes the old thing of, oh, we don't create chances for him to miss. Well, Quang's had the chances and he's on for beating Raul's Premier League record goal scorer thing for us in a season at the minute. I mean, after how many, 14 games so far? And he's on 8. So, just super. I mean, when the vast majority of people was calling wank last year, even on here, most of us. And the turnaround has just been phenomenal.
Yeah, it's not just the wank thing. It was we used to joke that his second touch was always his head.
Yeah.
Because of how bad his first touch was. I mean, he's had such a turnaround. I said before that, you know, he had a few injuries when he first joined. I think it took him a little while to get used to, well, actually learning English. His English is better than my English now if you watch interviews and whatnot. So I think he's probably set.
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. We all carry different stresses, big and small. It could be from work, stuff going on at home, or just from supporting your football team. You flatter to deceive, and as the bed sheets have always said, let us down. We often bottle up these stresses and try and keep a lid on them, but when you do that, it can start to affect you negatively. That's where therapy comes in. It gives you a place to get these things off your chest, get down to root cause, and figure out how to work through what's weighing you down. Therapy is there to help develop positive coping skills. It's not just for people who have experienced major trauma. It's about empowering you to be the best version of yourself. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not look and give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible and suited to your schedule. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners can get 10% off their first month using the code BetterHelp.com/Wanderers. That's BetterHelp.com/Wanderers. Let's get back to the show.
On there, and that's coincided with a good running form, Ed.
Yeah, and I think to echo what you were talking about with Neves earlier, I think we do, as a club and as a community, we can foster that kind of feeling, can't we, of, you know, Wolverhampton can be home, Wolves can be home for people. And Huang, like you said, I think there was a YouTube video that they did for New Year's or for some kind of Korean celebration where, you know, the chefs there cooked him a meal, and his English is incredible compared to where it was last year. And I think we are seeing the ramifications of a man that's confident in a role that suits him a little better. And he's been given the keys, hasn't he? He's not playing second fiddle to anyone. Huang is a starter in that front three.
I think it might have been maybe coming up to a month ago now that there were talks on social media that Wolves were in discussions with a new contract for Wang. On the back of this sort of run of goals, it's probably beneficial for the club to get that new contract ironed out quickly as possible, Stu.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we might stop singing that he's on loan then as well, which would be a miracle. But we know that
I still get frustrated. I know the lyric has been changed to he used to be on loan, was he?
He was on loan for the season.
I mean, we've got to do better.
But that's what we say. But when people sing it, they don't. No one sings was. It's only. That's what everyone sings.
I've got to keep jumping in, guys. Obviously, there's games running live right now. Manchester United have just been given a penalty via VAR against Chelsea, and Bruno Fernandes has missed the penalty, saved by Robert Sanchez, and then Man United ballooned the rebound over the bar. Big moments in that game at Old Trafford. The current scores are Sheffield United 0, Liverpool 1, Brighton 1, Brentford 1, Fulham 2, Forest 0, Palace 0, Bournemouth 1, and Aston Villa 0, Man City 0, along with Man United 0, Chelsea 0. On the first sort of few minutes, Villa have had two decent chances against Man City. Man City have got six defenders, if you count Rico Lewis in their starting lineup tonight. Obviously missing Rodri, missing Kevin De Bruyne, Jack Grealish, the list goes on for Man City. Stu, if Villa win tonight and they're going to that game against Arsenal on the weekend, they're in the title race, aren't they?
No, of course
they're not. They're in the title race. It's Villa. Yeah. They're lucky. Even in the top four, they haven't even played well in one game this season. Even when they beat Brighton and Newcastle, that was because Brighton and Newcastle were just literally imploding in front of them. The 6-0 against Brighton was never a 6-0.
No.
The fact that they've convinced themselves that they are is going to make it even better when they're not.
I keep telling my Aston Villa suppliers at work, you mean the title race if you win this weekend? And they're like, nah, we are. I'm like, nah, you've got to keep putting it on them to make them think they might be in it and then get it taken away from them.
I mean, they think they're winning the Conference League, which, to be fair, they should do. Yeah. Like any English club should, like we've said before. But if they don't do that and they don't finish in the top eight, what a glorious season that'll be.
I don't know how they do it. I watched the Tottenham game the other weekend when they won 2-1. Tottenham should have been like 3-0 up in the first half an hour. And you just think, it's as if like Emi Martinez was pulling world-class saves. Haaland. Oh! Emi Martinez literally just pulled off two world-class saves.
Well, he will,
yeah, let's get back to our game. Obviously, Wolves ran out the game 1-0. Pablo Sarabia, you know my thoughts on him. What was your thoughts on his performance overall last night? Because he had a few decent flashes of brilliance. But how slow was Charlie Taylor throughout that 90 minutes? Because the way Pablo Sarabia turned him on the halfway line and the way that Nelson Semedo roasted him in the first half, that is the reason why he's 3.9 million in Fantasy Premier League.
Yeah, I think the only time I think I've seen someone look slower on a football pitch at the Molineux. I remember once a linesman overtook Paul Butler and had to run back for him to stay on side with him. So I remember that happening when I was a teenager. But yeah, Sarabia, he's mercurial, isn't he? That's how footballers would be, you know, which means that sometimes he turns up, sometimes he doesn't. And he did that in the whole game yesterday. There were times where he was the only one showing for the ball and the only one trying to go forward and play some of those balls over the top that, you know, he is capable of. The reason he's a Spanish international is because he has that good left foot. But then there are still other times when he just looks completely unbothered and you're wondering.
The frustrating part of me with Sarabia last night, brilliant vision he's got. You can see that he's got it in his game. But there were two or three passages of play last night where he had to go for the Hollywood pass when there was a more simpler pass on. We've already talked about his short corners. Terrible front post corners last night because, it doesn't even seem to be like we've got players running to the front post as if they've been training at Compton doing that. I spent the majority of the game slating Sarabia. The guy like pulled me up on it. Just give him some credit for once. The only credit I gave him during the game was when the game became a bit stretched towards the end, I was like, we could do with Pablo Sarabia on here.
He's the way you're talking about him, he's like a Spanish Steve Corica in a way, where he does ridiculous things
We talked about Steve Corriger during the game last night, where Steve Corriger was ahead of his time.
He was? He was ahead of his time?
Same as Simon Osborne.
Oh.
Getting back on. I think games like that against teams like that suit him because he hasn't got any responsibilities. Just leave him, let him wander around, let him create a bit of magic. Obviously, Bellegarde, we know what he's all about, and bringing him on was wise, as we'll touch
on. Gave us an outlet, didn't it, towards the end? Yeah. I think he just opened us up a little bit defensively, but the game was stretched then. I didn't think it was going to end 1-0 the longer the game went on. I felt there was always another goal in it, but thankfully we got the 3 points in the end.
Yeah, I don't think you could start with Bellegarde against them anyway because of just how they're set up. Because they weren't going to commit with eight. They were going to be patient. They were going to be trying to pass it out. There was no effort to run through. So he could see the thinking behind playing Sarabia from the start, but you can't be doing that against better teams because we need responsibility every year. We haven't got the quality to have someone as flash as that. But when it works, it looks great. So it's a trade-off.
Is there an element of keeping him happy as well? Yeah, obviously, with this kind of semi-public feud and the emoji on Instagram and all that kind of stuff, is there also a throwing of the bone maybe from Gary to say he can have 80 minutes against Burnley?
Yeah,
it's just a thought.
I'd start him against Forest as well and go the same again because you know what they're going to be doing. I know what we're calling some people. You know what Forest are like, and he's got the kind of the pedantic annoyance factor about him, which they hated last year. So he's got a place. If that's a permanent place, who knows? But I wouldn't say so. No,
he warranted his minutes after that Spurs awesome cameo that he had. I didn't feel like he was the player for Saturday away to Arsenal. I thought we needed a bit more of we needed more energy in the midfield if he was going to be a three-man midfield. I said before the game on Saturday, I would have kept in Santi Breno and put Totti left back and had him come up against Saka to win the individual battles. I think Totti's really good at that. It's all hindsight now, though, isn't it? I'll just quickly jump onto that picture there on the screen. What was the last thing that made you have a facial reaction like Vincent Kompany there? Because he looks like he's had his heart broken at Christmas. It looks like someone's gave him a pair of socks on Christmas Day.
Aaron Rodgers doing his Achilles. That's the obvious answer for people who follow my other passion. But Wolves-wise, it could be anything from the last 30 years, couldn't it, really? But we've had enough of them. We've had enough of the times where shit teams have come and done us over. So it's about time someone else has suffered it.
I think it's more like when the ice cream van turns up outside and you ask your mum, can I have an ice cream? You've got ice cream
at home.
Yeah. What about you, Ed? Anything that made you sad like that? A sad TV series episode moment?
Oh, no, I cry at everything. D-O-I-S-O-S I can't put on. I cry at that. So no, nothing. Nothing. Up. I still can't watch the film Up after watching it the first time because that first 20 minutes is just the most saddest thing ever. No, but he looks that sad because I think he's sticking to that cap as well as his philosophy. He's sticking to that bloody cap, which doesn't suit him. It makes him look ill. He needs to take it off.
Yeah, he's got a bit like the head from the aliens in Mars Attacks.
Yeah, it doesn't suit it. Vincent, if you're watching, mate, it doesn't suit you. Take it off.
I'm sure he'll be watching. Thanks to those who continue to watch the episode of the Wolves Fancast tonight. Let's look at the next image. The next five games, obviously, we start on Saturday versus Forest at 3 o'clock, followed by West Ham, home to Chelsea on Christmas Eve, Brentford on the 27th, and then Everton on 30th of December at 3 o'clock. Look at those five games there, Stu. What's the sort of minimum points you'd want from those five games, not what you'd expect?
9 or 10. I'd be happy with that. I think that's kind of where we are. I mean, a point against West Ham, Chelsea, Brentford, that wouldn't be bad. Especially the situation around that Brentford game with the kickoff time and all that kind of nonsense around Christmas and stuff like that. So, obviously, the given ones are Forest and Everton at home, you can't be anything less than 6 points there just because of how they are. And I know Everton are better now, but even so. And obviously West Ham have got the Europa League factor. So, and it's Wolves, so it won't be that way around. But yeah, I think I'll be happy with 9 or 10 points from that, really.
What about you, Ed?
Yeah, I think you can envisage us quite comfortably. You could argue comfortably that we go unbeaten in that run of five, in all honesty. Maybe, 7, 8 points instead of Stu's 10. But I could see us beating Forest, getting a draw away at West Ham. I could see us beating... I'll be one of the sad sacks there on Christmas Eve, me and my son, watching Wolves against Chelsea. I can see us doing them because they're a weird team this year as well. And who knows, that Brentford, Stu and the rest of the away day gang. I don't know how you guys are doing it.
I'm not doing that one, no.
Chelsea. It's not even really London, is it? So you don't even get that factor either. And then Wolves Everton at home, that should be 3 points. I know they're better now, but we're still better than them, I think, man for man.
I'd like 7 points from them five games. Yeah. Like I said, go on beat. You could draw four and get and win one out those five games. I think I'd be happy with 7 points. You just talked about Chelsea being a weird side. Man United have just taken the lead with another goal from Scott McTominay. Chelsea an absolutely bonkers side, aren't they? Spent so much money. Pochettino's got still a lot to do. Got so many players on the books to work with. If they were a FIFA Ultimate Team, they'd have like 12 chemistry, wouldn't they?
Yeah, and that's probably that. I was going to say that's probably generous. I think they're Nottingham Forest, but with money, right?
It'd be like Pochettino and Enzo Fernandez is like 10 chemistry points alone. I'm not sure if I've got any young basics. Yeah. So the question was earlier, Nathan Judah put a poll out earlier saying obviously Jose Sarr is expected to be fit on Saturday, but who would you pick in goal? The majority of my friends have gone with the old adage that you don't change a winning side. Ed, does that stick with you?
No, I'd go Sarr all day, personally. He's the number one keeper. And there's an ego to that as well. So Dan Bentley came in knowing he was being number two, and we'll probably be able to argue that he took his chance in keeping a clean sheet and playing well against Arsenal. But Jose Sarr's our number one. So I just think he comes straight back in. I've said on the podcast a few times that I've been on now that Sarr is going to win us more points than he loses us. And I just think he should just come straight back in. As long as he's fully fit, straight back to the number one keeper. He's the number one for a reason.
Yeah, you can see by the screenshot there, I voted to have Jose Sarr return on Saturday. Stu, you already commented earlier on in the episode that you think Dan Bentley should be given the chance, even though you've got more of a fondness to Jose Sarr.
I mean, I've loved Jose Sarr for a long, long time, obviously, before he even came here. But if he is a back problem, you're going to... Don't rush these things as well.
Yeah.
There's no need. If he dropped... the clangers that he dropped at Ipswich... Then fine, kind of injection him, shoot him up and get him patched up and get him out there. But if he needs more time, he needs more time. But again, Dan Bentley has played really well. So like I did say on Twitter earlier, it'll be incredibly harsh to drop him after the 1.75 performances that he's put in. But saying that, I had said, Jose Sarr is a brilliant keeper. He's a world-class keeper. He's playing for Portugal now. So for all the people who hate him, and this will be the problem, as soon as he does one bad kick, people will be on his back because of that performance from Bentley yesterday. And you know that it's going to happen because the people are weird. But there was a few times yesterday where there was crosses into the box where Bentley went to come and went back again. So I ain't doing that. Well, very, very rarely would he do that. He'd come and claim and he'd fuck it up a little bit. Maybe he'd take the ball, but he wouldn't step back. When you step back, it creates a bit of uncertainty, especially with Forest, where they're not going to be tippy-tappy, are they? They're going to be as direct as anything. You need a commanding presence in there. And Dan Bentley in the air, from what I've seen so far, I don't think he's got it. So if Sarr's properly fit, then yeah, he has to come back in for me.
Talking of all the sort of other injury deaths that we've got at the moment, obviously Hugo Bueno came off towards the end. It appeared to be cramped from my view. I'm not sure if there's any news come out on that. There were talks of Ryan Aitnori possibly being back for last night, but it came a bit too soon, Ed. If Ryan Aitnori is fit on Saturday, does he take out Breno's place?
It definitely looked like cramp. So watching it back on Amazon, you can even see sort of his muscle contracting. So it definitely looked like cramp rather than anything more serious. And as Stu said earlier, he came in literally from the cold with no warm-up to play in those games. So if Aitnori is fully fit, it's, for me, similar to the Sark conversation we just had. He comes in as the starting left-back because he's played brilliantly this year. And last year, I was all Hugo Bueno. All day, every day, I'd have picked Bueno over Aitnori. But this year, Aitnori been able to see out 90 minutes, as well as his attacking threat and his ability to break the lines with the ridiculous dribbles that look like they're going nowhere, and then he'll do a roulette out of nowhere and get past someone. Yeah, as long as he's fit enough to last 70 minutes, 75 minutes, then for me, yeah, he comes in against Nottingham Forest. Is they're all about pace, aren't they? That is really what they've got. They've got Morgan Gibbs-White and Elanga that just run and run and run, and everyone else is a bit of a plodder. So we're probably going to need someone that, you know, a bit like more like Aitnori than Hugo Bueno, that will want to break through the lines because they're going to come and set up shop for a point, aren't they?
I mean, the bits that I've saw from their game against Fulham tonight defensively, they look all over the place. Obviously, they have struggled with defensive injuries this season, haven't they? That Felipe who they had last season was solid in the game at the City Ground when we went. Willie Bolly just can't stay fit, can he, Erster?
No. I mean, there's a reason why he was out the door here, because of that reason, because he's... Unfortunately for him, injuries have taken the toll on him. He was a colossus, but like the Johnny situation, your body can only take so much. And having played so much football and how they were thrashed to death under Nuno with a squad of like 15 players... You're getting injuries after that. He's going to make you susceptible, and it just looks like time's catching up with both of them. I think more for our problem is if it's really bad cramp and Bueno's out and Aitnori's out, do you go Totti and bring in other Bueno, or do you play Doherty there? Because like you just said, Ed, about the pace issue, Doherty hasn't got his pace anymore. That's going to be another one.
I think it would have to be Totti. It'd have to be Totti, right? And I think he'll be able to do a job on any one of their wingers. He baffles me, Totti. Sometimes he controls the ball like he's never seen one before, and then other times he can flick a ball around the corner and set up a goal. He's George Ellacobi, Mo Kamara, and a few other resurrected left-backs all rolled into one, isn't he? I think he's an enigma of a player, but I think he would have to play instead of Doherty because I just don't think Matt's as good as a stalwart he was for us over many years. He just isn't that anymore.
Yeah, I really like Totti. I think he's a player that you need to have. I think he's reliable. He's literally a warrior, isn't he? He's the type of defender that will run through a brick wall to clear one off the line. I really like Totti. Obviously, he earned his call up to the Portuguese national side recently, so hopefully he can be another good player for us in the long term. And obviously, one that's come... Is he classed as sort of an academy graduate type?
He might be too old.
Yeah, I think so. Too old, and he had a year at Grasshoppers and stuff, didn't he? And he did the rounds of the Fosun group, didn't he, for a while, I think.
Yeah, his registration would be here. That's one of them weird ones. I think he's too old.
Well, so yeah, but the amount of money that we got him for originally, if he carries on the trajectory that he's going, we should make good profit on him when we do sell him.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking Neil Collins.
Your mate
Nathan Collins money kind of thing for Totti already at the minute. If he went for 23, then you've got to be asking for the same for Totti Gomez now.
Yeah.
Surely? So
I'd probably want more, to be honest.
Possibly even more, with the fact that he's just been in the Portuguese side. If he can somehow get himself in the Portuguese squad for the upcoming Euros, then... Like you said, I'd be wanting a lot more than 23 million. Mm. Speaking of Neil Collins there myself. We got Brentford coming up soon, and I think Nathan Collins has been injured for the last few games. I was hoping we could come up against him because there's a lot of people out there who call him a Rolls Royce, and I just think he's just... I don't even know who to compare him against, because Paul Butler played for the Ireland national team, and I think Paul Butler's better than Nathan Collins.
Yeah, he's a Rolls Royce with the wheel missing, and he looks good, but it's not useful.
Yeah, it's another big game on Saturday. What's your score prediction for the game on Saturday, Stu? Wolves at home to Forest at 3 o'clock.
2-0. Nice routine, no drama, no ridiculousness. Just a nice 2-0 win.
What's your prediction, Ed?
2-1, because Morgan Gibbs-White is going to come back and do what all players that used to play for us do and come back and do something, either set it up or score. But 2-1 Wolves.
I still think that's one of the most bonkers moments of last season, that Nottingham Forest had a penalty to equalise and Brennan Johnson took it instead of Morgan Gibbs-White.
Bottled it
yeah. There.
There is a caveat to this. Have you seen the colour of their away strip this year?
It's like a...
It's blue and white, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, you said this before, the blue and white stripe effect.
I don't know if it counts for kind of imposters of the blue and white curse. I don't know if it's like a club-wide thing. But if they try these kind of shenanigans and wear that blue and white stripe thing to try and get at us, wouldn't put it past them.
You need like to do a Barry Fry, Stu and Wee in all the corners, try and get rid of the curse.
It's the biggest shithousery in Premier League history if Nottingham Forest have specifically charged blue and white away kit just so they can get 3 points at Molyneux. And then for some reason, due to some sort of kit mishap, they have to wear the blue and white stripe at home.
There's nothing stopping them wearing blue and white at home. You're allowed to wear one weird one per season.
Due to a shortage of personal detergent, Forrest have had to wear the blue and white away top at the City Ground for our reverse fixture in April. I didn't have enough time to do a quiz tonight. I literally scoffed a steak before we just came on. I've had a bit of heartburn for the last 20 minutes. Thanks for everyone who's joined us on the Wolves Fancast in association with Audi. I can't believe it. Raul Jimenez has scored again. It's Fulham 3, Nottingham Forest 0. Thanks for joining us. Thanks from me, Ed and Stu. Have a good rest of the week. We'll be back on Sunday with a show, hopefully talking about how we've smashed Forest into a Christmas pudding of embarrassment. Good night, everyone. Take care.
Ta-ra.
See ya.